It's the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Now here's your host of the WJR Gardening Show, Ann Thomas.
Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas. I am here with Mike Schomber, English Gardens Operation Manager. And Mike, today we are going to talk about growing vegetables and also your passion for tomatoes and hot peppers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I do have a big passion for, you know, growing vegetables and peppers, and I think I have some great advice for everybody.
I know you do. An interesting and informative show coming up next. Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with Mike Schomber. He is the English Gardens Operation Manager. And Mike, it's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too.
Tell me just a little bit about yourself, your career.
I've been an operations manager for English Gardens in the West Bloomfield location for a little over a year. I oversee kind of a little bit of all of the departments. Currently, I'm working in the bedding plant annual area, so I deal with all the vegetables and all the annuals and herbs.
But you've got a lot of experience as a gardener,
I understand. I've been growing a garden for over 20 years, and I put a lot of time and effort into it and figured out what works and what doesn't work.
So do you grow a vegetable garden and a regular garden?
I do. I do mostly vegetables, specifically hot peppers and tomatoes mainly. But I do flowers and other vegetables as well.
Today we're going to talk mostly about growing vegetables. So we are in mid to late May with this show. And I want to start out with you and just get some advice from you. Is it okay for me to start growing the vegetables?
This time of year, it's perfect to start. You know, you want to make sure you pick out the right spot. You want to find an area that's got roughly 6 to 8 hours of sunlight. You would want to keep an eye out for a nice, good, rich soil. You're looking for, you know, nice, rich, loamy soil. Not much clay, not too much sand either. I highly recommend getting soil testing done. It's always good to know what your pH level is in your soil. Most vegetables, they like to have pH level between a 5.8 and a 6.5. So knowing, you know, what varieties of plants you're growing and what they like, you know, can compare it to what your soil conditions are is very important. The more closer you are to that, having that correct pH, the bigger your plants are going to be, the more productive they're going to be. So it's very important, you know, and if it is off a little bit, you know, there's amendments you can add to adjust that. If you do grow vegetables, you know, I always tell people rotate your crop year after year. Certain plants require certain amounts of nutrients and other ones give off certain ones. So you don't want to deplete all your nutrients in your soil. So it's always good to add, you know, additional fertilizers in the spring, just kind of any kind of amendments that you can, you know, do. Me personally, I like adding earthworm castings when I plant, and I top dress with a little bit of tomato tone. Tomato tone adds a little bit of calcium into the soil, which also is beneficial to the plant. Also, when you are, you know, deciding where you are putting it, you want to make sure it's not going to be a really windy area. You don't want having a spot that's going to be holding a bunch of water. You just want to make sure you have an ideal growing condition kind of thing for your plant.
You mentioned soil testing. How do you go about doing soil testing?
English Gardens actually has a department where we can test your soil for a small fee. What you do is you bring in like a sandwich bag full of soil. I tell people, you know, try and scoop a scoop that's about 5 to 6 inch deep, so that way you get a good, you know, accurate reading of that soil, not just what's on the surface, but what's a little bit below the ground level as well.
And you mentioned preparing the ground before planting. So once I've gotten the soil testing done, I should put some type of a nice soil on the top of what I already have there, right?
Yeah, especially if it's in a raised bed. If you're in a raised bed, a lot of times, you know, you use the nutrients in it. So I usually tell people, you know, put like a 3-inch layer of fresh soil on top, you know, or if you're not going to do that, at least add some amendments to it. You know, You know, like I mentioned about the tomato tone. Tomato tone's got a lot of, you know, it's got some good stuff in it. You know, it adds a little bit of calcium. So what I see in my garden is a lot of times my plants will be lacking the amount of calcium. So by me adding the tomato tone in there, it's replenishing that calcium and it's making it produce better fruit.
It seems like around here in Michigan, Metro Detroit, mid-Michigan, we've got either a lot of clay or a lot of soil. What's the difference with regard to your advice on planting vegetables with each issue?
With clay, I mean, clay's hard to grow in. You won't get a good drainage. Adding a soil conditioner to it will help break down the clay and turn it into more usable soil. So I would add a little bit of soil conditioner when planting, just to help treat that, you know, if you do have a clay area.
So what about the sand, a sandy area?
Having some sand is okay because that will help with your drainage. We just don't want too much sand because you want it to hold some water in there. So if it's all sand, you know, I would add in some additional soil into it, like kind of mix that up a little bit.
So once you've determined that you've got a stable environment, you've got a place with it sounds like a lot of sun. I mean, you need a lot of sun,
yes,
for vegetables,
at least,
right?
At least 6 to 8 hours is what you want.
And you don't have too much water in the area. What's the next step with regard to the veggies?
So after you got your soil conditions right, you know, you go ahead and, you know, you can start planting. You want to dig your hole as only as deep as what the label says if you're using a starter plant. If you're using a seed, follow the directions on the packet, you know, as far as the depth to put that seed at. But that would be your next step.
And then with regard to the watering, are we watering every day or how does that work?
You're going to want to look at, you know, your soil. So if you have a clay soil, it's probably not going to be every day. But if you have a nice, healthy, rich soil, every day is recommended. I prefer usually either early morning watering or a late night one. You don't want to water midday in a hot sun because it will burn your plants.
So with regard to planting a vegetable garden, I've seen it done a couple of different ways. I've seen it done the way that you're talking about, you know, in the ground, in the garden, in the yard. I've also seen it done, it almost looks like people are planting it in boxes. What is the difference?
So in the boxes, it's a raised bed. It's really good for the new beginner gardeners, especially. You'll have a lot less pests in there. It's easier to maintain a moist soil, and it's easier to maintain the proper nutrients in the soil as well.
But how do you do it? How do you make a raised bed?
So raised bed, we actually sell kits at English Gardens.
Oh, really?
Yep, they're small square boxes, and you can buy, the more you buy, the more designs you can make with them. But yeah, it's just taking basically wood, making a box, raising it up off the ground. That's getting the animals out of your plants for the most part, at least all your small ones like rabbits and things like that. Deer obviously can still get into the raised beds, where then you put a fencing around it to help keep them away.
And I've also seen it where it looks like some people actually grow, you know, vine in the raised beds, and they take it to a whole new level. Are you able to help them with that too?
Yeah, so I always grow all my vine stuff up a fence. It helps save space. So like your cucumbers, your squash, anything like that, you can grow them up a fence. And it's actually better because your fruit's not resting on the ground, on the soil itself. So animals aren't getting to it. It makes it very easy to see exactly where the produce is, so it makes harvesting go a little faster, and you're not overlooking things.
You know, Michigan's weather is just so unusual. You know, sometimes we have these beautiful days, other days it's just absolutely miserable, temps are up and down. What are the best vegetables to grow in the state of Michigan?
You can really grow almost anything in Michigan as far as vegetables go. Tomatoes work great, peppers, cucumbers, cilantro, all the different kinds of herbs. Lettuces are great in early spring because they're more cold tolerant. You can grow basil, you can grow corn, squash, a little bit of everything.
And what about the types of tomatoes? What types of tomatoes? You know, I've gone into English Gardens and seen all these different varieties and just kind of thought to myself, which one is best for my home, my garden?
Really, there's not a wrong answer for tomatoes. Tomatoes will grow. I mean, any variety you plant in Michigan, they will grow. I grow 46 varieties myself.
How many?
About 46 varieties I grow.
Really? Is there one? I mean, that's kind of like asking you who's your favorite child, but is there one or two that you like better?
Well, for far as like a cherry tomato go, I really enjoy the Sun Sugar tomatoes. It's a nice small yellow tomato, really sweet, and they're just delicious.
Oh, that's great to know. Let's take a quick break. Okay. And when we come back, I want to talk about container gardening, starting veggies in a container and then putting them in the garden at some point. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. I'm Ann Thomas. I am here with Mike Schomber, and he is the English Gardens Operations Manager, and he's also quite the gardener. It's amazing what he's doing here in the Detroit area. So, Mike, I want to talk a little bit now about the best vegetables for containers. I know there's two different things going on here. You can either start the vegetables in a container and then plant them in your yard, or you can put the vegetables in the container, and if you don't have a lot of space, if you live in a condo or an apartment or whatever, you can keep them in the container, right?
Yep, that is correct. You can grow nearly any vegetable, herb, or tree into a container as long as you have the right container size. Far as going from a container and then going into your garden, that's something I personally do. Some plants have a longer grow season, and it takes longer for them, you know, to hit their harvest time. So something like a tomato or peppers, I start mine indoors in containers, just in like a little 6-inch pot. You know, I'll keep them there until roughly Memorial weekend when the temperatures are stable, there's no chance of frost coming. For those that, you know, want to keep them in a container, that's completely fine as long as you have a big enough container to withstand that root system. You also want to keep in mind, like, for if you're growing like a tomato plant, a tomato is going to get very tall. So you want to make sure you have a big enough container that's going to support that weight. You don't want it to be too top heavy, otherwise your container's plant is just going to constantly tip over on you. You're going to be risking chance of your plant, you know, getting damaged from falling and breaking branches and things like that.
What about soil in the container and also drainage for a container for vegetable gardening?
Yeah, so as long as you use a nice potting mix, any of those soils would be great for the container. I like using Fox Farm Happy Frog soil. It's got a little bit of microenzyme in it, which encourages root growth at a fast rate. And it's a soil that I can keep in there and not have to worry about swapping it out throughout the season.
And what about with regard to watering? Because that can be dicey with a container. You can either, you know, overwater or not water enough.
That's completely correct. So a container will dry out more quickly if you're growing in that versus growing in the ground. So you definitely want to check to see, make sure that your plant is getting enough water. I usually will remove like the first inch or two of soil down in there just to see that that soil is moist. If it's not moist, that tells me, okay, I need to water this plant today.
So with regard to timing, putting the veggie out into the regular garden coming from the container, you mentioned the frost issue. Make sure there's no chance of frost. Because will frost completely destroy a vegetable?
Yes. No vegetable plant is going to like frost on it. It will definitely ruin the foliage on the plant, if not kill the plant completely. Generally, if I start my plants inside, I will take them outside early spring during the daytime, and I'll bring them back in at night just to help get them acclimated to the weather conditions and kind of harden them off. So once you have them hardened off, you're good to go outside as long as there's no chance of frost.
And then you're looking for like a nice, even soil temperature, and that's when you make the decision to put them out.
Correct. I like putting my stuff out as long as the soil temp's above 50 degrees. Then I'll move them from the container in directly into my garden.
And how exactly would you know what the soil temp was? So do you have an actual thermometer?
Yeah, so English Gardens actually sells soil temperature thermometers. Which is great because you can just plug it into your spot and see, you know, if your soil temp's, you know, there or not. If you're in a raised bed, your soil temp is going to increase warmer faster than something in the ground would.
Now, I have more experience planting flowers and bushes and rose bushes and things like that. However, I have tried my hand at a little bit of vegetable gardening, and I've had mixed results. One of the things that I've noticed with the tomatoes has been that the yield hasn't been that great. What would I be doing wrong? Would it be something with regard to positioning of where I put the plant?
It could be. If the tomato plant's not getting enough sun, that would be a factor as to why it wouldn't produce enough. You might just be lacking nutrients in the soil. That's where, you know, like I was saying, doing the soil testing comes in handy. So soil testing, there's multiple different kinds you can do. You can do it just to find out what the pH level is, or you can figure out what the nitrogen, phosphate, potassium levels are. Knowing that is, like I said, is key. Soil is the most important factor, though. If you have a good, rich soil, you're going to have a great crop. If your soil's not very good, you're not going to have that great of a harvest.
Now, the other experience that I've had is I literally have seen animals, groundhogs in particular, carrying my tomatoes off to another location to feed the family. How do you keep all these animals away from these beautiful vegetable gardens?
Groundhogs can be a problem. Mm-hmm. We do sell, English Gardens does sell a spray. It's called Repel-All. It's made with cayenne pepper. It's safe for spraying on your vegetable plants. However, the animal must take a bite in order for it to work. Every so
really?
Often, you will have to reapply it. Especially after a hard torrential downpour rain. But that's one way that you can keep animals out of your garden.
And the deer, too. I mean, the deer could destroy a garden.
Yep, and that product will also work for deer as well.
Now, with regard to fertilizing, I know that Neptune's Harvest Hydro Fish Fertilizer is definitely the way to go with a vegetable garden.
Yes, that's a product that I am a big fan of. You want to do it about every 2 weeks at least. Tomato plants are going to love it. Tomatoes love anything that's fish-based fertilizer. You add that on, you're going to have a great crop.
So what is in it exactly? I know it's fish fertilizer, and the tomatoes love it. It's just other good nutrients that are good for the veggies?
Yeah, it's got fish in it. It's, you know, other bacteria in that family. It just makes it really good.
And they respond to it.
They do.
What other advice do you have for vegetable gardeners here in Michigan as they prepare to put the vegetables in this week or in the next week or two, really? Because by now, that soil should be just about ready.
It is just about ready. I like to rough up my soil a little bit, kind of help loosen it up. If it's a really hard, compact soil, you're not going to have the best drainage there. So I like working the soil a little bit, roughing it up, loosening it up, and that's going to help with airflow under, you know, for the roots and everything. It's going to give them a nice, easy pathway to grow. So you don't have to worry about the roots getting all bound up. They will actually expand and go down deep in the ground and branch out.
You know how the big farmers alternate their crops? You hear about crop alternation all the time. Do you do that?
I do. So I don't plant the same thing in the same spot year after year. I like rotating. So if I do tomatoes in one spot, the next year it'll become peppers. If I have peppers in one spot, I might do squash there. I always constantly rotate it, and that's just to help make sure that my soil is not getting, all the nutrients aren't getting taken out of there. Because every plant takes in different nutrients and gives off different nutrients. So by rotating it, you're going to have nutrients in that soil still.
And you really don't have any issue with regard to giving people advice to grow any kind of vegetable that they might like?
Yeah, no, not really. I like giving people advice. I want, you know, people to have success. It took me a long time to figure out all these things. I wish I had somebody to tell me everything.
You make mistakes, right? And you just live with
happen.
The mistakes and you learn.
Exactly. So mistakes do happen. So I've done a lot of trial and errors. And some things have worked great. And things that didn't work great, I just eliminated out of my mix.
Now, what about with regard to different areas? So some people may live in Oakland County. Some people may live in Wayne, Macomb, you know, maybe in mid-Michigan that are listening to this show right now. That doesn't matter either. Just pick whatever you like and kind of go for it.
Yeah, basically, the only thing you'd have to worry about as far as, like, you know, a listener down here in the Detroit area versus a listener, say, up north, their temperatures are going to be different, so your time of planting might be a little different. Your soil conditions are going to be a little different as well. Generally, up north, you have a little more of a sandy condition soil. So that's just something to keep an eye out for.
So maybe the people listening in mid-Michigan to upper Michigan, they might want to wait. They might be behind us by a week or two. Is that accurate?
That, you know, from my experience, that's what I would say, yes.
So let's continue this conversation. You have 46 different varieties of tomato plants in your garden, and I think it's close to 200 hot pepper varieties in your garden. So we are going to get into that at some point because that's really pretty amazing. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, and we'll be back right after this. Are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with Mike Schomber. He is the English Gardens Operations Manager. And trust me, he knows everything you could possibly know about gardening, especially vegetable gardening. So, Mike, I want to talk about seeds versus starter plants. You know, I want to get your thoughts on this. So let's go with seeds first. What are some of the advantages to using seed to start a vegetable garden?
You know, growing from seed is very great. They cost less, and you have a much larger variety to choose from. You can start up indoors early on to help you get larger plants for the season. By having a larger plant earlier on, you're going to have an even taller plant by the end of the season when you're harvesting, which is going to make for a larger harvest.
Do the seeds come from all over the United States?
Seeds come from everywhere. They come from all over the place. So there's not just one specific place seeds come from. Seeds vendors are all across the U.S. and in other countries.
So two different ways to do this, I think. Either start them in a container or put them right into the ground?
Yeah, that is correct. If you're doing it in earlier in the year, say, you know, like I start a lot of my stuff in February. So by starting in February, obviously it's too cold outside. So I'm using grow lights in my house. And by doing them early, I start them in like a seed pod tray. After that, I can let them grow for a little while until I get like a couple sets of true leaves on them. Then I will transplant them into like a 6-inch container with some really good soil in it. And by doing that, your root system is going to get bigger. It's got room for it to grow. I know if the plants do get a little bit bigger, you can always upgrade into an even bigger container from there.
What about these grow lights? What are they, and can people just get them at English Gardens?
Yeah, English Gardens sells a large variety of different kinds of grow lights, from anywhere from like a 4-foot shop light kind of grow light to just even just a little bulb that you just put in any kind of light fixture. They are great to use. Their LED ones are very low cost to use them. You go with an incandescent light, you're going to get a little heat from them, but they are going to cost you a little bit more money in electricity.
Do you keep them on the plant all day, every day, or how does that work?
Yeah, so my lights run right now about 16 hours a day. They're on, and then they kick off for the remaining of the time. And I have all mine on timers, which you can also get from English Gardens. But the timer, basically, you set it so that way the light will kick on at a certain time and it'll kick off at a specific time as well. So it just kind of makes life a little easier.
May I ask how many plants you have inside at this point that are getting ready to go out?
Currently at my house, I have roughly 3,000 plants.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm dead serious.
Wow. So you can actually do that. You can put that many little plants in your home and get them ready to go outside?
Yep. It just, you know, it's all about being strategically about things. I have a lot of mine are on 4 or 5 rack shelves. So then I can fit roughly 50 to 100 plants on each shelf, depending on the size of the plant.
And because you've got these grow lights, you don't necessarily need to have all these little plants by the window.
Correct. Correct. A lot of my plants are down in my basement,
So
I have a little space down there where I do a lot of growing. But you can put them anywhere. As long as you have a light on them, it's great. I recommend also including a fan. just to kind of help with a little bit of airflow. So that way, when you do bring them outside, the plant that's used to having no wind on it ever now is in this wind, and that's gonna make it burn. So by having a fan on it, you reduce that.
A little fan or a big fan, or does that work?
Any kind of fan. You just need the airflow on them. Just to kind of, and by having a fan, it's gonna help strengthen the stalk of the plants as well. So any kind of fan on them is going to be beneficial.
Now, it seems to me for a family with young kids, you know, kind of learning about life and the environment, this is a really nice thing.
It absolutely is. Kids love it, especially the younger ages. They like being able to see that plant grow. Like they put the seed in, and then they get so excited when they see it sprout, and then it turns into this beautiful plant that they get to harvest on. It also helps teach kids a little bit of responsibility. So if, like I know I do it with my daughter, we plant seeds together, and she actually helps me water. And so she knows every day we're going through and we're going to do some watering.
So for all these plants that you currently have inside, are you watering every day, and how the heck are you doing that?
Yeah, I do. I do water every day. It does become a job, you know, doing it the level that I'm doing it at.
Are you using like a little watering pot?
Yeah, so I live in the city, so I have chlorine water.
Oh.
So I actually fill milk jugs up every night and let them sit out overnight. Chlorine will actually kill microbes in your soil, and the microbes is what you need in there to help everything grow. It's all beneficial stuff. So if you're adding chlorine to your plant, you're actually hurting the soil.
Oh, that's really interesting. I thought you were going to say maybe that you were using distilled water or something like that.
Nope, I use milk jugs, and I go through with the milk jugs every night to all my plants and water.
And you're doing that on a daily basis,
every
pretty
day.
Much. That's really interesting. Do you have to worry about whether the home is humid enough, or is it too dry, or is that a factor too, or no?
I don't really have to worry about it. I have all different kinds of grow lights that I'm running. So my grow room stays roughly 75 to 80 degrees. And with a fan blowing around in there, I don't have much humidity in there. So it's about the right mix.
So knowing that you've started a lot of this in the home, let's turn to actually using potted plants.
Yep.
What do you think about that? Do you like that idea? What kind of advice do you have?
I do like starter potted plants. It's definitely takes all the guessing out of things. It's less stressful, way less maintenance. You don't have to worry about, okay, I put the seed in, is it going to grow?
That's true.
This is already established. It's already got a good root system. And so when you take a potted plant, you put it into your garden, that plant's just going to take right off, and it's going to grow at a faster rate. They're definitely easy to grow. You get a lot fewer pests in there. Typically, sometimes if you're growing a lot of seeds in your house, you might come up with aphids or another kind of pest that might be a trouble for you. Me personally, if I do get pests in my grow, I use Captain Jack's Dead Bug because it's a completely organic. You can buy English Gardens, or I will spray neem oil on them.
What is that?
Neem oil.
What is that?
Neem oil, it's all organic product. It basically covers the pest in oil. It makes it so that they can't survive. When you do spray that, you don't want to spray it during the daytime. You want to do it either early in the morning or late at night, because if the sun or your lights are hitting that oil, it's going to burn that plant.
What type of pests are really damaging for vegetables and vegetable growers? What makes you nervous?
Aphids make me nervous because aphids will feed on new growth. Asian lady beetles, they feed on plants as well. You get hornworms, you'll find them on tomato plants, and they will eat as well. Those are some of the main ones that I worry about and I watch for. But like I said, if you know that Captain Jack's Dead Bug and neem oil, both of those will work, and they're organic. So they're perfect ideal for edibles.
What other advice do you have for our listeners who really would kind of like to get started with growing vegetables?
I would just say, if you're just getting started on it, a raised bed would probably be easy for you to do, just because you don't have to worry about less animals, or a container. Just taking a regular pot, and as long as it's a good sized pot where you have a good root system, it's going to take a lot of the hassle out of everything, because you can actually grab that plant and you can move it around to different locations. You don't have to worry about, okay, I have a groundhog living in this area and I need to get my plant away from it. you can just pick that pot up, move it to a completely different location.
And that kind of goes to your sun issue, too.
Correct.
You can move the pot to an area where you do see that the sun is there from 6 to 8 hours a day, which is your recommendation.
Correct.
So that's great advice, too. We do want our listeners to know that all hanging baskets, if you buy one, you get the second one 50% off. So that's a really nice deal. It runs through June 5th. And you are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, and this conversation will continue in just a few minutes. And you do want to stay with us because Mike grows hot peppers, and this should be a very interesting conversation. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
I've been looking forward to this segment, Mike Schomburg, English Gardens Operations Manager, for this entire show. Because in this segment, we are going to talk about growing hot peppers. You have 200 different varieties. Who knew that there were that many? Are there more than that?
There actually is. There's way more than that. I'm actually friends with people that have close to 500 varieties. People are constantly crossbreeding peppers. It does take about 8 years for that pepper to hit its true form, far as the color, taste, and shape that it's going to be once they crossbreed it. For me, when I like growing my plants in full sun. Hot peppers, they love a lot of sunlight. They grow best, what I found, is with a pH level between a 6.0 and a 6.8. I try to give all my plants at least a 3-foot spacing, because what I found with pepper plants, they can get very big and very wide. So you want to, by doing a 3-foot spacing, you're avoiding having other plants shade the other plants that you have going next to them. In early season, you want to stake your plants. Just put a rod right next to it, whether it's a bamboo stake or a tomato cage. Put it by your pepper plants, because if they get really tall and they get full of fruit, those branches are going to become heavy and they're going to want to snap.
Sure.
So by having them supported with a stake or a cage, it takes a lot of pressure off of the plant itself. So that is one thing that I would recommend to anybody who's growing peppers, is to put a stake in the ground when you plant it.
So is there any difference between growing peppers and growing tomatoes or other vegetables?
Not really. Tomatoes, you know, you're going to want to stake and cage them too. Tomatoes get very tall, and so you don't want the top of the plant getting too heavy to where it's going to, the wind, you know, if the wind blows, it's going to snap. You don't want that to happen. So I would say it's much similar to like growing a tomato plants. The pH level of a pepper plant is going to be a little bit different than a tomato plant would want. Tomato plant would probably want it more like a 5.5 to 6. But pepper plant, the hot pepper plant specifically, like a 6 to 6.8.
And with regard to pepper plants, do animals stay away from pepper plants just because they're hot peppers?
Most of them will, but not all. Sometimes I get birds that will, you know, attack my pepper plants. Birds can't sense heat, so they will get in there. You'll end up, you know, sometimes with little small bugs will get in there. So what I like to do, I remove all my lower leaves off of my plants. By doing that, you're getting less travel ways for those bugs to get onto your plant. So that basically means they can only climb up the stem of the plant. And if you got that 3-foot spacing, most likely your plants aren't touching each other, so you don't have to worry about them crawling from one plant onto the other. All you're going to have is any insect that would fly onto there. Tomato worms, the hornworms,
sure,
they will also go on a pepper plant as well.
And what about the growing season for hot peppers?
So growing season for hot peppers, depending on the variety, but generally they take a lot longer than your typical pepper would. One reason why I start all my pepper plants inside very early. I start them in February because the length that it takes to hit that harvest date is much longer than it would be on like a bell pepper or a tomato. It's just one thing that you want to start early on.
So based on the fact that you grow 200 different varieties, You must love hot peppers.
I do. I do love hot peppers. You can do so many things with them. Hot peppers are great for many food dishes. They're great for making salsas, hot sauce, and more. You can eat them fresh. You can eat them dried. You can do, once they're dried, you can crush them up and make, crushed pepper flakes. Or you can run it through like a coffee grinder and grind them into a really fine powder and make your own seasonings.
You know, you mentioned that you have some friends that have, 500 different varieties. Is this a really popular thing to do nowadays?
So hot pepper market has been increasing over the last couple of years dramatically. More and more people are coming out with hot pepper challenges, which is drawing the attention of the media, which is making more people want to grow and experiment with them. And once you get a heat tolerance, you can actually really appreciate some of the flavors in some of these hot peppers. A lot of times people that don't like spicy stuff, they think of it as pain. They can't enjoy the
extreme pain.
They can't enjoy the flavor, but if once you build up that tolerance, some of these peppers are very delicious.
So this is an interesting point that you bring up, building up tolerance. You actually can do that?
Yes, you can. A kid at a young age, if he starts eating spicy stuff, or by the time he's 8, his tolerance is up there. Same thing for an adult. If you're somebody that doesn't really like spicy, if you slowly keep increasing the amount of heat level that you're giving your body, your tolerance will keep building over time, and then you will be able to eat hotter stuff.
That's really good to know. So one of the things, though, that you want our listeners to know and understand is the importance of pepper handling. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so all the heat comes from inside of the pepper itself. So handling the actual pepper isn't harmful. It won't make your hands hot or anything. But if you're cutting them up or taking the seeds out of them, you want to wear like a latex glove. And that's just going to really, protect your hands from having those hot pepper oils on there. Because once you get the hot pepper oils on there, it can be hard to get them off. I use vinegar and Dawn dish soap together to really help strip all that oil off my hands. There's nothing worse than having it on your hands and going to blow your nose, and then all the heat goes up there.
Yikes.
So if you do, if you are handling peppers, cutting them up and everything, make sure you wear gloves. Avoid direct eye, any eye contact. You don't want it in your nose or anything like that either.
So what's your advice if you do get it into your nose or your eyes? What do you do? Because water might not work to rinse it out, right?
No, water won't work. Water's actually a bad thing to use because water will spread oil.
Oh.
And will actually intensify it and make it worse. So it's very hard, once it's in up, in your nose or in your eyes, it's very hard to get, that pain away.
And you had an interesting story for us that one day in your home, inside the home, you kind of ran into a pepper spray experience. That's kind of a wow.
Yeah, so anytime that you're drying hot peppers, whether it's in the oven or in a dehydrator, you want to ventilate it. You want to make sure that you have, like an exhaust fan going, or you got the windows open. Because if it's in a closed, confined area, and they're all in your oven, that heat is going into the air. And that's going to make your whole house kind of like pepper spray.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Really interesting. Now, the problem isn't just, picking the peppers off of the plant. The problem is when the pepper is dried or opened or the oil gets onto your skin or into your body.
Correct.
That's very good to know. Is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about hot peppers? Approximately how many peppers do you get from one individual plant?
It's hard to give an exact number on that, but if you have the perfect soil conditions, and perfect great growing conditions, your plant will get much taller and produce a lot. I've had plants where I've picked over a bushel on each plant.
Wow.
But then I had some that wasn't in the right sunlight or it didn't have the greatest growing conditions, and I've only harvested maybe 15 off of it. So having the right sunlight and the great growing conditions is very important. You can grow a pepper in a container. Most peppers will do fine in just a 5-gallon, but some are going to want more like a 30-gallon bucket. If the ones that you have in a 30-gallon have potential to hit 6 to 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
Where, a 5-gallon might only get 3 to 4 feet tall.
This has been really fascinating talking to you, Mike Schomber, English Gardens Operations Manager. Thank you so much for the time today and the great advice. Wow. It's been really interesting hearing about everything that you have to say about gardening. And you've been listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.